We are live. Good afternoon, everyone. It is Cinco de Mayo, 2016, and we are in our monthly meeting of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. I'm Robert Spagnoletti, Chair of the Board. We are located in the hearing room at 1 Judiciary Square, Washington, D.C., room 540 South. And with me today is Deborah Lathan, my fellow board member. We are expecting Carol Schwartz. She likely will be here shortly, but we figure we'll go ahead and get started. An agenda was posted in accordance with the Open Meetings Act, and other than nothing on the public calendar was changed. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. So, are any amendments, any changes to the agenda? Okay. So we'll adopt it by consensus, and then we will get right away to item number four, the report from the Director of Open Government, Ms. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The central calendar, that public body central calendar and lists of boards and commissions is now housed entirely on the open-dc.gov site, which is what you have in front of you.
Sure.
The revamped calendar is more intuitive and user-friendly. WADA is going to continue to make modifications, including color-coding the meetings according to the same clusters as used by the Mayor's Office of Talent and Appointments. So I've asked WADA just to quickly show you what the calendar now looks like. And I'll continue to speak while he's doing that. Now that the calendar is in place and we're operating from a firm list of public bodies, I have put in a request with Councilmember McDuffie's office to consider introducing legislation that would make it mandatory for all public bodies to publish meeting dates, agendas, recordings, etc., on the central calendar. I have conveyed to Councilmember McDuffie's office that without this requirement, the Office of Open Government is unable to effectively monitor compliance and bring enforcement actions. So this is in lieu of my acceptance of the fact that the larger piece of legislation is unlikely to see the light of day for this remaining council period. So I asked just if they would agree to introduce this small piece of it, since this is squarely under the mandate of the Office of Open Government.
Right. And how did you get a favorable reception, at least to consider the possibility?
I received a favorable reception that they would run it up the flagpole.
There you go. Well, that's okay. That's so better than we're not going to run it up the flagpole.
That's right. That's right. So what you're seeing here is just a list of course, of all the upcoming
that's
meeting
great.
Dates.
Yeah.
And then, WADA, can you show them the calendar view, please?
I had the opportunity to be in a meeting with Mark Toohey, the director of the Mayor's Office of Legal Counsel, and he actually mentioned the fact that how nice it was to have one place to go to everything for everything. So
that's great. So it's helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
So we now have a calendar view for every public body.
That is great.
And so that it's not confusing for people.
Right. That's wonderful.
Moving on, the OMA advisory opinions. On April 18th, the Office of Open Government issued an advisory opinion to the District of Columbia Housing Authority Board of Commissioners resolving an Open Meetings Act complaint. The OOG found the Housing Authority Board in violation of the Open Meetings Act, of the Open Meetings Requirements of DC Official Code 2-575, Notice of Meeting Requirements under 2-576, and the Record of Meeting Requirement under 2-578. As required by the opinion, the General Counsel contacted OOG this week to arrange an in-depth training with the board on June 8th. Also, Mr. Barton and I met with the Interim Director of the Board of Medicine, and the Department of Health General Counsel's, the Department of Health's General Counsel to discuss the efforts the board is making to come into compliance with the Open Meetings Act
right.
as a result of the finding of violations by this office. We've requested to train all Department of Health board executive directors and board counsels on the requirements of the Open Meetings Act, and then we'll come up with a training schedule for all Department of Health boards.
Right, and we had discussed at the last meeting the fact that this was an area of continuing challenge.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're,
that's great news.
I will say for the record that they're very open to getting the training, and they acknowledge that they need some improvements, and we're going to be working together
great.
To get them
that's
in
great.
Line.
That's great news.
As recommended by the chair of this board, on April 20th, I testified before the Committee on Business, Consumer, and Regulatory Affairs regarding the DCRA fiscal 2017 budget. I testified in support of funding for the agency to revamp its IT infrastructure so that it may publish online permits and pending permits. Councilmember Orange, who chairs the committee, indicated the EOM has allocated in DCRA's budget several million dollars for IT at DCRA. I think the figure he said was $5 million. Johnny and I both heard that We're not entirely sure what the outcome will be. DCRA is still, however, requiring agencies, requiring the public to go outside to outside companies to make copies of permit files. That matter continues to be a vexing problem. And then we did our own internal experiment, which I'll let Johnny describe.
Good afternoon. On April 19th, I went to DCRA to obtain a permit file for a property that I had known to be a recent new construction in D.C. I was required to complete a record request form at the bottom of which it read, all requesters must contact the copier to arrange for payment of documents.
The form said that.
The form says that. At the bottom of the records request form, it reads in capital letters, all requesters must contact the copier to arrange for payment of documents. I was given some of the documents at that time, but the remainder of the permit file was told would take 24 to 48 hours for DCRA to pull, at which time I needed to contact one of seven companies to make copies.
I guess that's an improvement.
I actually contacted all seven. Two only got voicemail. One had said DCRA contacted them approximately 2 weeks prior to ask if they could make copies, but they had no further contact with DCRA. One company charged $7 per page. One company only does a high volume of copying, which they said was 100 copies per order. And then there was Blue Boy, which
was happy to do it for you.
And quoted a price of $190 per page.
Yeah, it's amazing how that worked out.
We went back 2 days later. DCRA telephoned to call to tell me that the rest of the permit file was in, and they said that I needed to, of course, choose one of the companies. I selected Blue Boy, and then there was a bit of confusion. I called Blue Boy, who told me they could not take a call from the public for a DCRA job, that DCRA had to call them. I called DCRA, and we went back and forth, and finally DCRA finally called me to tell me that the file was ready and that Blue Boy could pick it up. And I think Blue Boy quoted me a final figure of $28.95 for the copies.
What was the reception by the council when you kind of explained what the situation was? Other than saying that there's money allocated in the budget for some future, I mean, after October 1st to fix this.
They thanked me for my testimony.
Really?
Yeah, they did. The only Councilmember Orange asked me if I had any input concerning what other IT improvements needed to be made, and I told him I have nothing else to offer other than just being in this lane of records that should be disclosed on the website and how they can go about doing that. Of course, I mentioned that the cost is far less than what DCRA is proposing.
And again, I'm a little bit mystified about why the short-term fix isn't renting or buying a copier that does the right size copies so that people at DCRA employees can simply comply with the law. I understand that to get them online is a more challenging issue, to get them scanned in, and that may require more complicated and space issues and the rest. But in terms of the physical, because you weren't looking for a digital copy, right? You're looking for a physical copy, right? So why isn't the short-term fix that would at least get them halfway in compliance? I mean, am I missing something?
You're not missing anything, and I don't know the answer, unfortunately. And to be honest, it's my sense that this is not really much of a priority for the council. The council member from Ward 6 did ask if it is my belief, because I did say in my testimony that DCRA is lucky to date that it has not been sued for noncompliance with FOIA.
Right.
And he asked me to confirm that. And I said, well, they're just fortunate they haven't been sued. But no one has reached out to me since for further input. But it's still going to be a problem.
Yeah, and then you've got the sort of the classic cost of litigating this versus the cost of how much, you know, your average consumer is going to pay the $27.95 to go and have a copy of Blue Boy.
But I also raised the potential cost of litigation just for the city alone to have to defend itself against this type of noncompliance.
So where do you go from here? I mean, what do you think?
I would very much like to go to court just to see what happens. I really would.
To actually bring an affirmative action?
Yes.
Against DCRA?
I really would.
That you would bring the action as opposed to having some other outside party bring it?
That's not my preference. I've had discussions with outside entities as whether or not they would like to, but there's no one has responded.
Right, right. But well, how does the media, like Washington Post and others who do FOIA requests, I mean, how do they respond to this kind of thing?
Well, in fact, I did receive an email from another reporter right around the time of the hearing who complained he's having the same problem. And unfortunately, everyone just kind of accepts the fact that it's a big mess and nothing can be done about it. But I just don't think that anyone is being served well by that resolve.
So just for the record, it's 2:13, and we've been joined by Ms. Schwartz. The video will be showing this as well. So but I just put it technically on the record. So I don't know what that looks like.
I don't either.
So we should give it some thought. Is there – the council is now clearly aware of it, and DCRA is aware of it. EOM? Do they have a view of this? Other than having put money in the budget for IT in a more generic sense?
I don't know. I will certainly reach out to the EOM just to generally make them aware.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why they're not aware. This has received coverage, and I informed the director of DCRA that I was coming to testify at the hearing. So anything short of informing the mayor directly, I don't know what more can be done. But I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, maybe go ahead.
I would think that, you know, before one government entity sues another, we probably should tell the mayor that you should go to the mayor and say, look, they're leaving me no other option, and this could be embarrassing to the administration. But
certainly isn't the first time you've taken a position.
I don't enjoy it.
Not directly in line with the mayor's. But I think that it is... Just from sort of a practice perspective, and we're talking about the DCRA still having people go out. We did a mystery shopper who was directed to go to the copy companies and inevitably led back to Blue Boy just by virtue of who they had sent to. It's sort of like having a FOIA MOTA for the list of boards and commissions. It's unnecessary under the circumstances. And at least I understand that fixing the big problem of having the stuff online publicly available is a more challenging issue. I get that. But at least the short term, walking out with the physical copies, which is probably what most people want anyway, and will get them at least halfway there, strikes me as being manageable in the short term. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems that we should be at least... you are the ombudsman on FOIA issues, right? So I would support you going to, you know, through either through Betsy Cavendish or Mark Toohey to the mayor and saying, hey, look, we're talking about it. We're thinking this may happen because it really, something needs to change and not next October or next March.
Well, I think at minimum, given the fact that we have conducted our own internal investigation of sorts as to what the process is, I do think that the EOM deserves a formal communication from my office detailing what the experience was, what the outcome was with getting access to these records.
I agree.
And then perhaps ask for a face-to-face meeting to find out what are the options that are available. I do not want to press the nuclear button. But it almost seems as though it's going to require something that drastic in order for people to kind of sit up and pay attention.
Right.
It's not my preference.
Right. No, I understood.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
What about you as chair getting involved, too? I think that it might be helpful with the mayor because it then just is not the person who is charged with the open government, has the position that's charged with it, but it also, I think, gives the weight of the board to that conversation. And I think it might, be helpful.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. So
maybe a joint letter to start,
yes.
And then
I can do the follow up.
And we'll do the follow up. Yeah.
I'll wear my Teflon when I go.
Yeah.
So, training. Since the last board meeting, the OOG has conducted, along with OGE, two combined OMA and ethics trainings with MOTA and with the DC Retirement Board, respectively. I have to say that was one of my favorite trainings to date with the Retirement Board. They were lively. OOG conducted two FOIA trainings with the Office of Latino Affairs and the Department of Forensic Sciences. OMA and FOIA compliance, thanks to Mr. Barton, OOG is now tracking all informal advice given regarding compliance with FOIA and the OMA. Since the last board meeting, we have responded to 6 Open Meetings Act requests for advice and 8 requests for FOIA advice. It's a good thing to note that it's very encouraging that these inquiries are coming from the public, the EOM, and the council.
That's great.
Last but not least, the budget. The Committee on the Judiciary convened today to consider and vote on its draft report and recommendations on the fiscal year 2017 budget request. I won't go into the details, but suffice to say that there were no surprises or changes from what was discussed at the budget hearing on April 14th.
Right.
The committee moved forward with the BIGA budget increase of approximately $286,000 to cover costs for PS board stipends and to support a small increase in MPS funding. I reached out to Kate Mitchell in Councilmember McDuffie's office prior to our meeting to find out if there were any updates. The meeting occurred at noon today.
Okay.
But as far as I know, there were no changes for BIGA's budget.
Yeah, and I did see the draft markup, and it looked exactly the way you just described.
Right. Right.
Mr. Chairman, could we clarify that the increase in stipends has to do with the increase in the size of the board and not an increase of the present members?
Exactly. We're going from 3 to 5. All right.
That concludes my update.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sobin, the Office of Government Ethics.
All right, everyone. All right, I'm going to try to move through this quickly because we have a number of things to get to today, but please don't hesitate to stop me. On the status of our previous month's activities or our recap, we opened 10 investigations. That's up from 4 the previous month. We closed, I know it says 0 there, but it could be as many as 7 by the end of the meeting today, depending on what action the board takes.
Okay.
And that's down from 11 last month. Again, the 20 that we have currently open will be affected maybe by the end of this meeting today. And then the investigations that are stayed have not changed, 16 still.
Right.
All right. Publication reporting obligations, including our quarterly complaint report. We have posted our most recent performance data. One noticeable statistic is that we closed 79% of our cases within 120 days. That's an improvement over the 64% closure rate last quarter. We also opened 36 cases compared to the 9 the previous quarter.
Excellent.
Trainings. Attended by staff. There were 5. General Counsel Flowers attended a DC Bar program on doing pro bono as a government lawyer, which has some ethics issues involved in it. Attorney Pat Selt attended an advanced legal writing and editing training program. Attorney Cooks attended 3 programs, advanced legal writing and editing, the mandatory legal ethics course offered by the DC Bar, and advanced legal writing, effective legal writing, offered by the Office of the Attorney General, who actually brought in an outside person who specializes in this stuff. Conducted by us, 11 since the last meeting. That's up from 8 last month. The trainings conducted included 2 full 2-hour monthly ethics trainings, 2 full 2-hour trainings that were specifically tailored to the Deputy Mayor for Planning and Economic Development's office, 2 new employee orientations, which included MSS training sessions, the regularly scheduled training for board and commission members, and we also conducted a Hatch Act training for the Department of the Environment. We're still attempting to schedule a large-scale Hatch Act training session this month for all of our ethics counselors, as well as any other interested district employees, given that we're in the middle of campaign season. We're considering holding the session during the lunch hour to encourage attendance. Still trying to nail down the room. We continue to hold our regular IT and budget meetings, as well as monthly meetings with the Office of the Inspector General. Item D, advisory opinions and advice. There were no requests for formal advisory opinions since the last meeting. However, we are considering issuing a sua sponte advisory opinion on the application of social media to the local Hatch Act and to other restrictions such as the endorsement of private entities or individuals by government employees. This has become an issue with social media applications such as LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. There is some federal government guidance on this. It's relatively recent, but we think that given the proliferation of these social media things, that we need to do something on the district side. And so we're talking to Mr. Grimaldi about it.
Right.
I think Ms. Patzelt is actually, though, going to be drafting the opinion, but we're going to be, because it's a sua sponte opinion, we're going to include Mr. Grimaldi as well.
And we've had at least one social media-related matter that came before us.
At least one.
At least one.
Last month, the board received a request that the D.C. Fire and Emergency Services Department for a waiver of a potential conflict of interest involving FEMS, which is the acronym, employees who are currently working for FEMS and American Medical Response, Inc., AMR. They have not responded yet to that request.
Right.
They expect to do so by Monday, so we'll have it on tap for the next board meeting.
Okay. Yeah, but I thought it was important that they get a chance to respond to what your opinion was.
Yeah. Right. Informal advice, 66 since the last meeting. That's down from 77 last month, but this does not include the advice queries that were answered in connection with the lobbyist and FDS filings, of which there are too many of those to count. I can't believe Ms. Patzelt doesn't have the phone attached to her ear down here in the
reaching
hearing
to the highest levels of government, as I understand.
Item E, ethics legislation, the Comprehensive Code of Conduct. The review of Bill 21-250, our Comprehensive Code of Conduct, is nearly complete. We completed another weekly session reviewing the legislation that we submitted. We have only 6 pages left to review. Again, we're doing this because it's been sitting in the council for a year now, and we decided we better go back and just make sure our circumstances haven't changed in a way that we want to revise anything.
Yeah, another reason why it's good if they would move this along, because we don't want to be doing periodic reviews of our own bill.
But it's going well, and we are catching a couple of things, nothing too major. Our goal is to get the final report to the Judiciary Committee by the end of the following week. Of next week. On a related note, the Judiciary Committee's draft budget report at page 27 says expressly that the committee, quote, looks forward to moving forward with a comprehensive code of conduct. So that is encouraging. Rulemaking. Changes to the rules of the board. We have finished our working sessions and are in the process of reviewing a redline version of proposed rule changes for the board's review. Mr. GC, when do we expect to have that to the board?
Let's try the next meeting.
Yeah. What are the main items that you are looking at in that rulemaking?
I think they're mostly tweaks. I don't remember any major items. There are some things that we looked at to make sure it conformed with, say, the Budget Support Act and the recent legislation expanding the board. For example, it's got language in there pertaining to quorum. I know we looked at whether or not we want to have 5 members signing each order.
Right.
That's rule-based.
And just for historical purposes, we wrote those, I almost out of thin air, because we had bodies that we took them from, but it was before we actually ever held a meeting. I mean, before we got started, so we have now, you know, years of experience, so it's understandable that they would need to be tweaked to comport with, you know, legislative changes, other rulemakings and the rest, so that makes perfect sense.
And we also saw some instances where the rules were based on the previous conflict of interest statute and not the Ethics Act, so we're going to make those conforming changes as well.
Great.
Item G, the budget. Director Hughes has already mentioned it. Very, very happy to see that the mayor's request for our 16% increase in BEGA funding was accepted by the committee. This is really remarkable considering that there were cuts made across the board to other agencies. I don't know any other agency that got this kind of an increase. Also, the draft budget report contains our budget support recommendation on the 501c3 entities on the whole nonprofit question. So it looks like that made it through. The target date for the full council consideration is going to be May 17th, 2016. All right. Let's see. Skipping to I. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. So I'm going to let Ms. Patzelt discuss this. Ms. Patzelt, here, I'll hand the microphone to you.
Just one lobbyist waiver today? Oh, my.
Well, it is not filing season for lobbyists.
No, I was going to say we're...
Yeah, so it is a bit out of season.
That's right.
Yeah. The one request we have is from an entity called Jews United for Justice. It's a nonprofit entity. It was brought to our attention via a complaint from an outside source, and we did an investigation into whether, in fact, what they were doing was lobbying, and it turned out that it was. And so what we determined was that they were lobbying between September, October, and November of last year, 2015. So they met the $250 threshold. They hadn't registered for 2015 and had not filed an activity report.
Got it.
They have since done so, but we also fined them $300 for failing to file a registration form and failing to file an activity report within the time frame that they're supposed to do so. We oppose the request for the waiver because, as people who are lobbying, as is indicated in our opposition, they're lobbying council members, they're working on the minimum wage bill and the Paid Leave Act, and it is their responsibility as lobbyists to either contact us with questions as to whether they should lobby or to find out what the requirements are on their own. Their reason for requesting a waiver is that they were not aware that what they were doing was lobbying because there was a date miscalculation.
Okay. For all of the reasons that you set forth in the opposition, I would vote to deny the waiver.
I also read your write-up on it, and I don't find that their excuse is valid, so I also vote to in favor of not granting the waiver.
And I do so for similar reasons.
Okay, great. Have order here. And I will pass this back to the director.
Okay, item two under financial disclosure. The financial disclosure filing deadline is almost here, May 16th. All forms, public or confidential, must be submitted to our office by that date. We sent filing notification emails with login information out to public filers on April 12th. I've sent hard copy letters out to the public filers as well. I think you remember last year when we tried to automate it by sending out only email. People claimed that it was, went to their spam folder or something. So this year our goal is to have nobody who either A, didn't get it, and then B, didn't file. So our goal is to get everybody notified, everybody to file, so we don't have to issue any fines and we don't have to issue or consider any waivers.
We've been trending in the right direction, which is good.
I'll just put the board on notice. We are mightily struggling from an administrative support side this year. And I think the reason is because we've been so successful in increasing the numbers of people who are supposed to be filing from years past and getting the word out. And next year I'll be asking the council for an additional FTE to support the current administrative position that's handling it, because there's no reason to have folks here on the weekends and late at night. It's just, it's not right.
Can I join in on this? When you said earlier, Mr. Sullivan, that we were certainly pleased with our 16% increase, and I join in with that. But I think we have to look from whence we came. I mean, our budget was so small at the very beginning with a colossal task to do. And so the fact that the mayor and the council are doing catch-up work to give us the tools that we need to do our very, very important job, I think is great, but it's also due. And I don't think we need to forget that because, you know, when I saw the original budget and saw what this group, and I just got here a few months ago, but what this group was able to do, both the, you know, the members and the staff, kudos on that kind of budget is quite extraordinary. But I think a lot is expected of us. And I think our desire to do a lot is certainly paramount. And so I think that this catch-up should be continuing to take place, and I don't think we should be shy about asking what our real needs are. And so I'm as happy as I am about the 16%, I'd like next year for maybe it to be 25% so that we can get on course where we should have been from the beginning.
Yeah, and I'll ask you to come with me when I go to
the mayor's. I'll be glad to.
And I'll echo this by also saying that, you know, we started with less than nothing because the FTEs and the budget that we have are actually the Office of Open Government leftovers from the year that we started. And we were very judicious in how we asked to grow the board and the staff of respective offices and to, you know, sort of lay the groundwork, which I think we've done very successfully. You all have done very successfully. And so I think that we are at the point where, you know, we don't have a reputation as being outrageous in what we request or outrageous in what we do. We're very measured and careful and judicious in how we handle things. That being said, I completely agree. People should not have to be here nights and weekends handling the management of public financial disclosures. I mean, that it's one thing if you're in the middle of a very hotly contested hearing and people are, you know, burning the midnight oil, and that's a one-off, but not this. Definitely not this. So,
okay, well, thank you for your support on that. Item J, non-confidential investigations. We have several to discuss during the confidential portion that may become non-confidential at the end of it. With that, we're on to opportunity for public comment.
Okay. At this point in our public meetings, we always offer the public an opportunity to speak on matters that are relevant to the board. If anyone has interest in doing so, now would be the time before we go to a closed session. I see the usual suspects here, and so I will go ahead and now entertain a motion to move the board into an executive non-public session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Code 2-575B to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Code 2-575B13 and personnel budget matters pursuant to DC Official Code 2-575B10. So the time is now 2:35. If I could have such a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and we'll end the public session and go to a closed session. I know that we have a guest for one of our closed sessions on a budget matter. It's only 2:35. Should we go through the investigations first and then? How long do you think it's going to take?
I expect we would dismiss the staff before we get to the other conference.
Yeah, how long do you think it would take? It looks like six of these are bundled together, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Right, but we're already familiar. We're familiar with those. Okay. How about, do you want to tell at 3 o'clock? And if they have to wait, it would only be for a very short time. Great. All right, so we'll go ahead and address Office of Government Ethics first, then.
Pollen, but it's raining, so I don't know if it's pollen or not.
Pollen acts, rain makes the pollen worse.
Oh, does it? Because I'm waking up with headaches.
Me too.
It makes it worse. It doesn't clear the air out.
Maybe it rains for a week.
Just done the trick. Okay, so it is 3:40. We're back on the public record. We have one matter to announce from the closed session, which is that the Office of Government Ethics has entered into a negotiated disposition with Marjorie Yeager. It's in Ray Marjorie Yeager, case 1446-001. It's been approved by the board, and it will be published online later today. Ms. Yeager is the chief of staff for the the district's deputy mayor for education, and she's acknowledging that she used her title and position to obtain assistance for the Broadcasters Child Development Center, a nonprofit child care center on whose board she served, and she made representations on behalf of that board before her office. She's agreed to pay she's going to acknowledge that she used government time and resources for other than official business, represented an outside entity in a matter involving the district government, and used public office for private gain, and agreed to pay for a fine of $1,500 and resigned from the board of the nonprofit. And again, that will be posted later today.
Yep.
Thank you all very much. With no
Thank you.
For
see you
business,
next month.
We'll see you the first Thursday in June.
Excellent.
Time is now 3:42.
And you make your 4:40.